11329 real 1.
Mr. Chambers, real 1. Could you tell me, first of all, whereabouts you were born, please?
I was born in London.
Whereabouts?
Queen Charlotte's Hospital in Hammersmith, actually.
And what did your father do for a living?
He was an engineer. Turner, actually. Tall room Turner.
Did you go to school in Hammersmith?
No. We left there when I was very young. I first went to school in Craven Park, Harlesden.
How old were you when you left?
Left Craven Park, I was 9 years old, and we moved to Perivale, which was then a new housing development. And my mother, who's still alive, she's 89 this year, she still lives at Perivale in the same house.
And you were only 15 years old when the war started?
That's right, yes.
Do you remember the outbreak of war?
Oh, very well. Yes.
What do you remember about the announcement that we were at war?
This is a very funny story, actually. I have an aunt in Frome in Somerset, and my parents decided to evacuate my younger sister and younger brother to this aunt. And they actually went down on the Saturday before the war was declared. So I was left on my own in the house, and the next-door neighbour did my meals and things like this. And of course I listened to Chamberlain's broadcast on the 3rd of September. It was a glorious day, saying about the war, announcing that it was a war with Germany. And of course shortly after that the air raid sirens went. So I was, as you say, 15 years of age, and I was, you know, visualising hordes of aircraft coming over. So the safest place I could think, my father had a garage attached to the house. He had an inspection pit. So I went and sat in this inspection pit. And then I thought, well, gas, what about gas? So I had my gas mask. I remember lurid tales of mustard gas during the First World War. So, believe it or not, I went to my bike and got my yellow oilskin cape, you know, rain cape, often saddlebag. And I sat in this damn inspection pit with the gas mask on and this yellow bicycle cape over me until the all clear went. It was very, very funny afterwards, you know. But it seemed a sensible thing to do to a 15-year-old at the time.
Had you expected war?
Yes, this is why my parents had taken... My father was quite convinced that's why that particular weekend he'd taken my sister and brother down to Frome to evacuate. Actually, they didn't stop down there very long. They were only down there a few weeks, but... My father was, you know, well, like many other Londoners, expect London to be bombed to bits.
Were you still at school?
Yes, I was still at school. No, I just left, I beg your pardon, I left school at 14.
So, were you doing a job?
Yes, I was working for a solicitor's office at Eden Common.
In a clerical capacity?
Clerical capacity, yes.
How did the local defence volunteers come into your life?
Well, first of all, I joined the ARP. Immediately I was 16, I joined the ARP as a messenger boy at a warden's post. And then immediately I was 17, I joined the Home Guard.
What did the ARP work involve?
I was more or less a T-boy and running messages from one warden's post to another and being on duty, patrolling the streets, but... nothing very serious. But
what did being on duty involve?
Every evening till about 10 o'clock. Or you could be called out if there was any raid in progress, but we didn't get very many incidents at Perivale, actually. It's very few bombs fell there. So it's,
did you have a uniform?
No, just an armband and a steel helmet. Oh, and a different respirator. They issued with the military respirator rather than the civilian one.
What was the difference?
The military one fitted right over the head and had a hose that came out of the front into a chest box sort of thing, whereas the civilian one was self-contained with just a nozzle on that acted as a filter. But
what would you have done if there had been an air raid?
I would have manned the warden's posts and still carried messages, phoned through throughout, you know, to ambulance services, fire services, anything that was wanted. I don't think I'd have been allowed to participate in actual rescue work at that age.
So you would have been a coordinator, really?
Yes, that's right. Mm.
Were you called an ARP warden?
No, I was just a messenger. Actually, no. The wardens had uniforms, as I remember, but I never had.
And do you remember the dates, approximately, that you did that work?
It would be from 1941, late 41, I should think, until I joined the Home Guard in the beginning of 42.
Can you tell me about joining the Home Guard?
Yes. I'm sure it was 17 that you could join the Home Guard. I joined it as soon as I could. And it was the 14th Middlesex Battalion I joined. They had their headquarters at Perivale, which is an old sports pavilion, which is still there in perfect condition, practically opposite Hoover's on the Western Avenue. But there was nothing Dad's Amish about the Home Guard when I was in it. We had uniforms, we had weapons, we did live firing on ranges. It was quite professional. It stood me in good stead when I went into the army, actually. The officers of the battalion were all ex-army themselves, you know, and it was quite a well-run outfit. Nothing very comical about it at all.
What did the firing on the ranges consist of?
Firing 303s and a machine gun, which I forget what that was called. That was live firing. And we threw dummy grenades. This was usually on a Sunday morning. We reported for duty two nights a week, and every Sunday morning. And usually it was Sunday morning, we went onto the range. That's a place called Hedgeley, near Beaconsfield.
How do you spell that?
H-E-D-G-E-R-L-Y. Hedgeley. Used to go out there every other Sunday morning, I think it was, for range practice, but we was on duty on every Sunday morning.
Were the weapons very good, or were they just the...
Yes, it was the 303 was the rifle the army was still using at that time. Oh yes, it was.
But they weren't just second best issue.
Oh, I think they were second best. Yes, you know, they weren't really top class condition or anything like that, but. You know, they were effective, and they worked. That was the main thing.
What type of people did you have in your unit of the Home Guard?
I remember one was a salesman, travelling salesman. I stood guard with him quite a few times. And my boyhood friend, who I'm still in touch with, chap I went to school with, we married sisters, actually. And he was an electrician. He was in the Home Guard. The shopkeeper, I remember. Can't quite remember the occupations of the...
What about their ages?
Bob and I were much the youngest. They were in their mid 40s, 50s, at least, most of them. And the officers were even older. Yeah. Can't remember their names now, but it was quite an efficient little organisation, you know.
Were the officers First World War veterans?
Yes, or at least two of them were. The other one, I think the adjutant was too young to be in the First World War, but the CO and one of the other officers definitely were. They loved it. You know. They were in their element.
Do you remember their names?
No, I'm afraid not. I can't remember their names.
Or which units there had been in the First World War?
No, not after all this time.
If the Germans had come, what kind of tactics had you prepared to meet them with?
Just liaise with the regular army and do what we were told. I understood that was what, you know, this was the general idea of what would happen. On our own, we were really nothing, but to assist the army in any way possible, I suppose. assume that's what we would have done.
Did you have any contingency plans for blowing up bridges or?
No, certainly not in my unit. No. Well, at least not to my knowledge. As I say, I was again 17-year-old and I probably wasn't privy to everything that went on. But,
were you called a private?
Yes. And then, of course, I was 18 in April 1942, and in October, 18 and a half, I was called up into the regular army.
When you see this programme called Dad's Army on the television, what specifically, in the way of unprofessionalism, is depicted, which you would never have contemplated in your particular unit of the Home Guard?
Quite impossible for me to imagine us being so inefficient. We were run on strictly military lines. We did drill and everything like that sort of business. I find Dad's Army hugely entertaining. You know, it's really very funny, but it bore little relationship to. Mind you, that took was alleged to taking place in 40, wasn't it? 1939-40. I mean, by 42, the whole thing was much better organised. And. Getting really professional.
Did you have any contact with other units? Did you train with other units?
Yes, we weren't the only ones that used the Hedgley firing ranges, for instance. Other battalions of Home Guard also used that. We used to take our turn. And we did field exercises with other units on a Sunday morning, roaming over Horsten Hill and golf courses and places like that. You know.
What did that actually involve?
Map reading and how to advance over open territory and crawling around in the muck and all that sort of business, you know. That was a field exercise, as they still do to this day, one imagines.
How did they tell you to advance over open territory?
Oh, no, crawl on your bellies with your rifle, and you had equipment as well, you know. It was quite an exhausting thing. As I say, it stood me well when I went into the regular army.
Did they give you any training in recognition of enemy uniforms or vehicles?
No. Aircraft recognition, quite a lot for some reason, but no. At least we didn't have any training in that.
Where had you been whilst the Blitz was going on?
Still living in Perivale.
And you said there wasn't much bombing.
No, there wasn't. you know, being young, we used to go up on Horsen Hill during the air raids and look out over London, see all the searchlights and the bomb explosions. And we did have some bombs in Perivale, but nothing like they had in the other parts of London.
Do you remember where the bombs fell in Perivale?
Yes. There was one fell in a row called Devon Close. There was another one in Argyle Road. And in the Perivale Industrial Estate, a few of those factories caught fire with incendiaries, but they were contained. They didn't burn the factories out.
How much damage did these bombs that you've just mentioned cause?
Not devastated. They didn't devastate the house. Caused considerable damage, blew out windows and roof damage, but nothing very serious. Well, not according to what was going on in the rest of London, you know, the East End and things like that.
Did you go into town to see the damage there?
When I was on leave a couple of times, going back off leave, and making my way to Paddington Station twice during heavy air raids. I remember walking down Knightsbridge and it being alight from the beginning to the end of it, almost. That was on the Piccadilly Line train, got on to Elberton, and it stopped at Earl's Court, I think it was, and didn't go any further. And I remember walking to Paddington, and most of the West End was alight. I remember that very well.
When would that have been?
Was when I came when I was coming home on leave from Reading, which would be 43, 44.
You've put here that you were in Reading in January 44.
Well,
to April 44.
Well, it would have been the beginning of 44 then, I should think. No, it couldn't have been Reading, I don't think, because I think the raids had stopped by 44, hadn't they? At least the Blitz.
There weren't many raids, I think, by then.
No, it must have been earlier. Yeah, Paddington would be for Reading. I could have been at Southampton. That would be Waterloo. I'm sure I was making my way to Paddington. No, it must have been earlier than 44. It must have been 43 sometime, I would have thought.
How did you react to being called up?
Oh, I was keen. I was very keen to go.
Did you find that what you'd done in the Home Guard stood you in good stead?
Did, very, very much. The only thing that really sparked first time in the army, I'd never been away from home before. And I remember being desperately homesick. You know, I think most people are. And the infantry barracks at Fulford, York, you know, they were fairly grim place. And it was run by the King's Royal Rifle Corps, so all the drill we did was light infantry drill, which I don't know whether you're aware, you know, it's about twice as fast as the regular army. And it's quite tough.
Now, later on in the war, towards the end, you were in Berlin. Can you tell me how you came to be in Berlin?
Yes, when the war ended, we were in Antwerp. And we were HQ 2nd Battalion Remy. And why we were... Why a unit had to be picked, of course. They picked representative units to prepare this advance party to go to Berlin. And it was codenamed Operation Midnight. And it formed up at Namur in the Ardennes. We were with the American troops. We joined American party there. We had American rations. That was all very pleasant. It was our first experience of working hand to hand with the Americans. And it just formed up there, more or less consolidating all the various representatives of the units. I think signals, Royal Engineers, they all had representatives there, and we were the Remy representatives.
Can you explain the purpose of Operation Midnight?
It was to prepare as far as possible, secure accommodation in Berlin and barracks for the main party that was due to come, I think, in August, September. So we were the trailblazers, sort of thing. And that was a very interesting time, a bit of a distressing one, but still very interesting.
How many people were involved in it?
In the advance party, I should think possibly 400 or 500. It was led by General Sir Brian Robertson. The infantry detachment was the 7 Armoured Div, the Desert Rats from the 8th Army. They represented the infantry. And it was,
What were you personally supposed to do in the operation?
I was driving then. I was driving the ADME, the Assistant Director of Mechanical Engineering. But as I say, soon after we got to Berlin, as I've said on the record, I remustered from a driver and trade test as a clerk. I thought, you know, the time had come to get some promotion. I'd wasted more or less 4 years, and so I remustered as a clerk. But
what kind of briefing did you all get about handling the Berliners and relating to them?
Well, you've heard of the no fraternisation ban.
Yes.
Well, I'm afraid in Berlin we largely ignored it. You know, Berlin was a law unto itself. and we were given the usual lectures, you know, how to treat, but no one was quite certain of the reception that in the event, you know, we had a very strange reception. They welcomed us with open arms because they convinced we were there to evict the Russians, which we were from our sector. We were allotted Charlottenburg, which is the West End part of Berlin, and the Americans went south, and the French had a small portion in the north, a district called Wedding. But Berlin was in a dreadful state. It really was.
Can you describe it?
Well, it was like the rest of Germany, really. I've often said, and I think it's been said before, that no one who didn't see Germany in 45 and 46 really knows what bombing is all about. It really appalled everyone. I was only, 21 at the time. And, you know, you don't let much worry you at that age, but it really appalled me. You know, whole towns were like brickyards. And Berlin was no better than the rest. There was no gas, of course, no electricity. Although the electricity did come on for 2 hours a day after a while. And the water, you know, was undrinkable. You had to boil everything. And we carried these sterilising tablets that we dropped into water, even to clean our teeth. You know. And it was just chaos. It was... nothing ran, of course. There was no U-Bahn or no S-Bahn was running at that time. And the Russians, of course, in the early days, they behaved appallingly. I've often asked for explanation of this. I was told that the first troops to get in, the Russian troops getting to Berlin, were frontline troops, and they were by no means the elite. You know, they were more or less, well, peasants. And all these stories you hear of them with watches up their arms is quite true. I saw it dozens of times. And pulling standard lamps out of a house and wondering why they wouldn't work outside and things like this. It all happened, it's quite true.
You actually saw this, didn't
Yes,
you?
Yeah. Yeah, the Russians, first of all, couldn't understand why they couldn't come into our area. And there was incidents night after night where they would come in, continue their looting, what shops that were left and things like that. There was always clashes with them. It simmered down after a while, but...
Were you involved in any clashes?
Yes, yes. I came out of... they opened a cinema in a street in Berlin called Neue Kantstrasse. I remember it. And I came out of there one night with a couple of friends and more or less walked straight into a rifle fire between British troops and who were shooting at Russians. I remember laying down in the rubble and the bullets going over.
Were the Russians firing back?
As far as I know they were, yes. It was late at night. And
were there casualties?
Not that I saw, no. No, I didn't see any casualties.
What should have been the cause of the clash?
The Russians coming into our sector and either accosting civilians or looting. We were told, how true it was I don't know, was told on several occasions that the Russians really didn't have documentation, they didn't have numbers like we did in the army. And if anyone were caught in our section and arrested and taken back to the Russian sector, they were allegedly shot. Whether this is true or not, I don't know. But they were desperately trying to recover full discipline in Berlin because they'd run amok there, as you probably know. It was.
Did they really run amok?
Well, yes. Well, when they first got to Berlin, oh yes, there was looting, rapings, and what. The German women were absolutely terrified of the Russians. They raped indiscriminately, and mind you, you know, the answer is, well, German did that in Russia as well, and they were only getting their revenge. But oh no, it. When we first got to Berlin, we were supposed to stop in the Olympic Stadium, and the Russians had been there, and they'd absolutely desecrated the place. There was two Olympic pools there; they'd used as latrines, open latrines, and the statues and things that were around all had their heads knocked off, and cupboards and furnish inside were all reduced to matchwood. we actually, for three or four weeks, we slept in the backs of lorries parked in the football field at the Olympic Stadium. It was uninhabitable.
Did you see any instances of Russian troops' misbehaviour towards the women?
No, I didn't witness any, no. No, I was only going by hearsay from what the Germans told us. And
did the Germans speak to you about what the Russians had done?
Oh yes, they did.
What type of things would they say?
Well, they said, you know, how they raped their women and stole everything and...
Was there any misbehaviour by British troops in Berlin?
The usual troops. I can't remember any specific incidents, but it'd be a wonder if there wasn't. There's always the odd bod at all. But
did it compare with what the Russian troops were doing?
Oh, no comparison whatsoever. No. No, certainly in Berlin, or anyway, all the time in my time in the army, I never saw troops completely indisciplined. We was always under discipline. But the Russians, when they got to Berlin, weren't they? Were just allowed a free hand, and it must have been terrible for the Germans, without a doubt.
Were they after alcohol?
Yes, alcohol, food, anything at all. It was just. One reads of the Vikings, you know, pillaging and rape, plunder and pillaging and rape. That's virtually what it was. Nobody was safe.
What was the attitude of the Russian troops towards British troops?
Very, very cautious. Not friendly at all.
I remember taking
a photograph of one once, and he didn't like it one little bit. Didn't like to see him have a camera pointed at him. No, we didn't. At the ordinary soldier level, we never mixed at all with the Russians, so I didn't think to do with them. Not at all.
So there was no organised contact?
No.
Had a black market developed by then?
No, not to the extent that it did. In 1946 and 47, the black market was rife. Frankly, we all lived off the black market. But largely, again, it was authorities' fault because they paid us in German currency. And at that time, the mark was 40. It was 40 marks to the pound. But in Berlin, you could get 100 marks for a packet of cigarettes. So you simply bought cigarettes in the Naffy, sold them for German marks, and you didn't have to draw your pay. You could just live off that. And people were going home on leave after 6 months and cashing huge amounts of German money into English. So the authorities should have stopped that early on. They did after a while, and we were paid then in what they call BAFs, British Armed Forces vouchers. And that stopped a lot of the trading on the black market. But it was ludicrous. When I was a sergeant in the officer's mess, I think a bottle of whiskey was 8 and 6 pence, which was 16-17 marks, and you could get 100 marks for a packet of 10 cigarettes. I suppose really we lived like millionaires. And then again, the army brought in a rule that you couldn't cash more going on leave than the last.